Meanwhile, this past Monday in Colombia...
Welcome to Señor McMahon's Barbershop, the best barbershop in Colombia.
Thank you. I'm here to get a little trim on my vacation. Wait a minute. Don't I know you?
I get that all the time. Not to worry, hombre. We have two types of haircuts. The 90-minute Hulu special or our Super USA Deluxe 3-hour and 10-minute weekly extravaganza.
Well, I'm just looking for something simple, so...
The extravaganza it is.
Wait, I didn't say...
Let's get you in the chair, pal. And while you sit, you can watch some pure barbershop entertainment.
A few weeks ago, Bobby Lashley looked right into the camera, and he professed his undying love for his sisters.
What the hell is this?
Bobby was mean to all of us, so I grabbed the closest thing to me, my mama's broom.
Ugh, this is awful.
Excuse me, do we have a problem?
You heard me. Your entertainment sucks. Your haircut sucks even more. There's no way I could sit through 3 hours of this horse shit.
You son of a bitch. How dare you? No one calls Señor McMahon's product horse shit.
Get your hands off me.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
What are you doing?
Ah.
Business time, baby.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered a street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat, elite!
You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Well, at least I could poke fun at myself. My misfortune. After a rare week off last week, we are back. Episode 548 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off here for Memorial Day weekend, Sunday, May 27th, 2018. I am the Solar Monster, back from my I was going to say overseas. I guess technically it wouldn't be overseas. It was an international trip, an international vacation to the great country of Colombia this past week, which is why I was not able to do the podcast last week. And if many of you have visited my Twitter page earlier in the week, you saw the photo that I posted. And it was not a very pleasant photo. Photo of my injury that I sustained on my trip, my leg injury, where, you know, people have been asking me, how the hell did you do that? Like, how the hell did you rip your leg open like that? And I wish I had a sexier story to tell, but the God's honest truth is that at the house that we were renting, there was a pool room. I don't mean like a swimming pool, though there was a pool, but there was a billiards room. And I was going to go into the room to play, to shoot some pool with a friend, and he sort of went one way, the proper way, through the door into said room. I went the other way. And in this house, there was essentially it was a window, but it would slide open. So it was sort of like a sliding window, sliding door, glass door that had been open, 10 or 15 minutes earlier. And, this was after midnight by now. We were getting ready to fly home the next day. I probably should have just gone to bed, but I'm like, I will play a game. And I just didn't realize that the window had been closed. I don't know how I didn't see it. I don't know how I didn't notice it. But I went to, lift my knee up to kind of step into the room, not realizing that the window was closed. And I put my knee right through the window. And I shattered it, immediately collapsed to the ground. I can honestly tell you that I have never seen so much blood in my entire life. Just blood everywhere. I honestly didn't even look down and see how bad it was at first. Someone brought over a towel. I put the towel over my leg and I just sort of held it there. And before long, this towel, I think it was blue. The whole thing was red. It was just a mess. And so I had to get rushed to a Colombian hospital a few minutes away. Hardly anybody there spoke English. I'm trying to communicate with people. It's very difficult because they don't speak the language and I'm shaking. I'm in shock here from this injury. It's just a really deep gash in the leg. Took 10 sutures to close this thing. Honestly, for the stitch job that they did down there in Colombia, they didn't do a bad job. I don't know if they were doctors or just nurses. It was two ladies, and they sort of stitched me back together. And I didn't know what to expect when I came back home, and I was going to show it to my own doctor. But he said, no, all things considered, they did a pretty good job here. But it's just been very, it's been very frustrating. And I got to tell you, it was really scary, you know, when you're in a foreign country and you get hurt. And that's never happened to me before, but you get rushed to a hospital, right? You don't speak the language. You're just in a state of shock. They literally, as I'm sitting in the hallway in this little hospital, they had to slide a towel underneath my chair just to sop up all the blood. And as they finally wheeled me away into one of the rooms to put me in one of the beds, you could see the little blood trail like behind my chair as they sort of wheeled me in. It was pretty scary. It was very scary stuff. It was not fun. I was determined to get the hell out of there and go home. I had two flights the next day. I was making a connecting flight to Bogota and then from Bogota back to New York, which was over 5 hours. And I could tell you that I wasn't sitting first class either, so that was not a fun flight home. And it's so much worse than I thought it would be, because it's right on the joint. It's right at the bend of my knee. It's a really bad gash. I mean, thankfully, there's no other sort of structural damage, and it's no ACL tear or anything like that, but it's still a pretty miserable injury. I've never had an injury like this before. And so it's very frustrating. In the meantime, I'm sort of getting around on crutches, or one crutch anyway. I can't put a sneaker on my left foot because it blew up. I have no idea why. It suddenly got very swollen. I had an ultrasound done on my leg. I was in the hospital for 9 hours the other day because my feet swelled up and I couldn't figure out why. So we had the ultrasound on the leg and the x-rays, and there's no blood clots or anything like that because I've mentioned to you guys the whole blood thing, the blood condition. I'm at greater risk for that sort of thing. And that was my fear. I said, oh no, you know, I may have blood clots in my leg. I have to get this checked out. But everything checked out fine in that respect, so I have no idea what's going on here. But I could tell you, looking at my foot here, I look like, it reminds me of Buddy Love from The Nutty Professor. That's what it kind of looks like. Very sexy. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not getting the stitches out supposedly until Thursday, so I'll be hobbling around at least until then. I can't really do much. I can't really go anywhere. It's just very frustrating. I have to see an orthopedist for some reason. I don't know. It's just a mess. This has been a very challenging year for me, to say the least. That's, I think, being generous. But I will say this. Up until that point, it was a very fun trip. It was my first time in Colombia. We saw the sights. I almost did some paragliding. I'm kind of bummed I didn't have a chance to do that. But beautiful country. Had a great time there up until the very last night. And so that's why I've been sort of silent most of the week, is because I've been pretty friggin' miserable. Especially night. Nights are the worst. You got to try to elevate it. You're in one position for so long, and then the leg starts to hurt, and this is rubbing up against the stitches. It's just a mess. And on a lighter note, that was my week. On a lighter note, though, speaking of going through glass windows, I think this would be appropriate to mention here. There was a story this week in the New York Daily News, the esteemed New York Daily News. I'm being sarcastic when I say that. Story about a man not named Jannetty, who was thrown through a barbershop window by an angry stylist who apparently ran off. Nobody at the shop knows the guy's name. They claim, well, you don't even know how to reach him. He just sort of up and left after he threw the patron through the window. Let me read this to you here. It says, a Brooklyn barbershop customer's face was sliced open after his stylist shoved him through a plate glass window Thursday afternoon, according to police. The bloody 3 p.m. scene at the Levels Barbershop in Crown Heights unfolded because the victim, age 33, was unhappy about his haircut. He threatened to withhold payment, enraging his barber, who allegedly shoved him through one of the store's front windows. The shove launched the customer forward through the window. He stayed upright, but the glass ripped his face open. I would have fixed the dude's hair for him for free, especially if I knew it was going to be a problem, said Free Small, another barber at the shop. I think it's a learning experience for everybody. Communication is key. So, I love how there's a moral to the end of the story. A guy gets thrown through a window, and the takeaway is communication is key. I wish somebody had communicated to me that window was closed when I put my leg through it. I will say this much, though, after this whole experience this week, I will never again hear that glass shatter for Stone Cold the same way again, not after this. You can support this podcast by using our Audible link, as I'm sure many of you know, audibletrial.com/solomonster. As we head here to the midway portion of 2018, you can still use our link to sign up for a free trial, 30 days. You can sample the service. You get one free audiobook of your choice when you sign up using our link, so please go ahead and do so. If you've already done so, spread the link around to friends and family, audibletrial.com/solomonster. And of course, all of our PayPal VIPs last week and this week who donated, I wanted to get all caught up on the shout-outs here since we had no show last Sunday, but I want to say thank you. As always, of course, you guys know $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on this show. Just go to thesolomonster.com. Thank you to Capital Carnage, Christian Reyes, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Fast Blast Tim Banks, the Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, the Show-Off Corey Van Dam, the Renton Road Warrior Taylor Schatt, the Demon Temptress Samantha Krasinski, who would like to shout out her boyfriend Peter Rodriguez, who just celebrated a birthday, so happy birthday to Peter, the Dogs Bollock Sean McLaughlin, Grimlock Garrick Booker, the Anarchist Andrew Heller, the Archangel Anthony McLean, and Andres Rusty Nail Nunez. Thank you very much for all of your support. You know, back to the injury for a second. So one of the things, as I'm sitting in the hospital, just shaking and shivering, because literally all I'm wearing is a bathing suit and nothing else. And I have like flip-flops on, which I never wear, but I have flip-flops on. Thank God they were black, but they were soaked in blood. And I'm just sitting there shaking, and I'm starting to get nauseous, and I just want to friggin' die. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. I go, you know, I'm in a foreign country here. I have no health insurance. I said, my health insurance ain't going to do shit for me here. How much is this going to cost me? I'm like terrified of this. And it turned out, like, in Colombian currency, the U.S. equivalent, it basically cost me, like, $300. You know, in this country, it would have cost me, like, $15,000. So, in a way, I was kind of happy that I got hurt there and not here, because it would have ended up costing me a hell of a lot more money here, which I'm sure in the end it will anyway for all these scans. And, you know, that's what happens when you have a almost $3,000 health insurance deductible. So, lots of fun times ahead. I did not have a chance to chime in on the All-In sellout when it happened because I didn't do a show last week. I just wanted to take a quick moment here to congratulate all the people involved there and the basically, you know, a job well done. They proved a lot of people wrong. Whether or not you say it's an even 10,000 or it's 9,000 or whatever, because apparently there's a little over 1,000 tickets out on the secondary market right now. That's still pretty damn impressive, and I think when Showtime comes on September 1st, they'll have a packed house there, 10,000 people at the Sears Center, for a self-financed independent show. That is a big, you know, that's a big accomplishment here, and I thought it was kind of silly seeing some of the people online trying to, I don't know, sort of attack them or you know, diminish it as though it's not some sort of legitimate accomplishment. To me, it doesn't matter whether it's an even 10,000 or 8,000 or 9,000. You know, you have a company like Ring of Honor, which puts out a quality product. I've been to a lot of Ring of Honor shows in my day, and I'd love to you know, start going back to some shows. I was hoping maybe even to check out this show. I think they're at the Hammerstein on June 2nd. Now, that's not going to happen with my leg, but Ring of Honor, for all of the great, you know, stars and talent and all the great shows they put on, I think their biggest crowd ever is still maybe in that 5,000 or 6,000 range. And they've been around since 2002. And that's the biggest crowd they've ever done. In one shot here, you have Cody and the Young Bucks. They're pumping their own money into this thing, this random show in September, Labor Day weekend, the middle of Chicago. And they sell out in less than 30 minutes or whatever the allotment was. They sell out in under half an hour. You can't minimize that, you know, you can't diminish that. That is a huge accomplishment. I'm sure WWE is well aware of what's going on, and I mean, how could they not be? And it's a pretty cool thing. It's a nice feather in the cap for Cody. You know, he's been on a very nice run for himself since leaving WWE. When he signed his Ring of Honor deal, I believe he claimed at the time that he was now making more money than he had been making in WWE. But he also just looks like he's having fun. You know, he's having more fun. There is life outside WWE. And even though I don't get to cover it as much as I do WWE here on this show, as far as non-WWE stuff, at least not lately, for a number of reasons. Hopefully that'll change soon. But there is a lot of cool stuff going on in wrestling right now, and you don't have to look very hard. It's out there. It's not that hard to find. There is a lot of cool stuff out there, notwithstanding whatever the hell it is that we saw on Monday night, which does bring me to WWE. They have cashed in big time on their new TV contracts. We knew that they were looking to make a decision on their television future. We heard May at the earliest. Maybe May they were going to make an announcement of some kind. Technically, they still have not made any announcement, but word leaked this week from outlets like Variety and The Hollywood Reporter that Monday Night Raw will, in fact, be staying put on USA Network, which almost surely guarantees that the show is going to be staying 3 hours, which I think is absolutely awful. I think that was the worst thing that could happen. Not for their bottom line. I'm sure they're you know, dancing a jig, but I was genuinely hoping Raw would move to Fox. I really hoped Raw was going to move. I hope they were going to go back to 2 hours. Instead, it looks like they're going to be on USA at least through the year 2024. With SmackDown, and this was even bigger news, SmackDown moving to Fox. So basically, USA and NBC Universal went all in on Raw. They said, look, we want to keep Raw. Raw's a big part of the success of USA Network and keeping us in the top 5 or top 10 every week in the cable rankings, which some people would have you believe isn't important anymore, but of course it is. And they were willing to let SmackDown go. They were willing to let another network bid on SmackDown, not have some exclusive stranglehold on all WWE shows. So they threw hundreds of millions of dollars at WWE to keep Raw, apparently. Let, you know, Fox basically swoop in and take SmackDown. And this is not FS1. This is not one of their sister cable stations. This is the main Fox network. Reportedly, it's a 5-year deal that is supposed to be worth over $1 billion for SmackDown, the so-called B show. B show now stands for billion. Now, I should say, WWE has neither confirmed nor denied any of this. There have been no official press releases from WWE or any of the networks involved. It sounds like a done deal, but until they make it official, nothing is a done deal. So just be aware of that. ESPN decided to go all in on UFC, $300 million for 5 years for all UFC programming. That sort of triggered some of this because the two things were linked. I think you had a lot of, you know, network people kind of sitting around waiting to see how the UFC situation was going to resolve itself, and that would dictate WWE where they ended up. So, you know, my understanding about the UFC stuff is that some of the UFC programming was going to stay, like the live specials were going to remain on Fox. Fox had a standing offer of about $200 million for UFC. UFC tried to play games, and they lost. They overplayed their hand. So they still get $300 million, which from what I gather is at least $100 million less than what they were hoping for, although that's still pretty good. But that paved the way, especially for Fox to swoop in and make the deal that they apparently did for SmackDown. Now, this would mark WWE's return to Fox for the first time since that final Saturday night's main event show from the original run, not the reboot in 06, but that last show that aired in 1992, which I believe had the Shawn Michaels match where he beat Davey Boy Smith to win the IC title. This was right before the Survivor Series in 1992. And it's a big deal. It's literally a big deal. I mean, $1 billion, but it's a big deal in that this means promotion during NFL games, possibly during the Super Bowl. I don't know if Fox still has the rights to the World Series. Actually, now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure Fox doesn't have the Super Bowl, but I don't know if Fox still has the rights to the World Series in 2019. But these deals, important to keep in mind, these deals actually technically do not take effect until October of next year. So now we're sort of in this lame duck period, at least with SmackDown. I mean, Raw is going to stay right where it is, so it doesn't really matter. But these deals take effect in October of next year. So if they still do have the World Series on Fox, I'm sure they'll plug the hell out of WWE during it, especially because the World Series is in October. October is when SmackDown is going to be moving to Fox next year. So that's huge. The plan is that the show will move back to Fridays, its old slot. I would have to think it's going to be SmackDown Live still. I mean, why pay that much money for a taped show? That really doesn't make sense. I mean, these numbers are just insane. you know, I was seeing all these numbers on my phone when I was away, and it was like, holy, you know, I couldn't believe it. I mean, who would have seen this coming, that a major network like Fox would give WWE $1 billion just for SmackDown? I don't know that anybody saw that coming. And all of this just also debunks this notion that some people still peddle that ratings don't matter anymore. It's like, look, you're right in that they may not live and die by the Nielsen numbers the way they did in you know, 1999 during the Monday Night Wars. That's true. But those ratings are going to matter a whole hell of a lot on network television, because you have to think that if SmackDown doesn't do as well as they hope and expect that it will, I mean, I don't think they would cancel the show, at least, you know, not the first few years they wouldn't, but they could easily move it to a different night. They do that all the time with network shows. They start on one night, they don't do so well, they bump them to another night, maybe it's not as ideal. So, you know, even if you're someone who believes that ratings don't matter anymore, they will next year, and for the next 5 years after that. So I don't want to hear this ratings don't matter nonsense anymore, because now it's all just a moot point. There's also a rumor floating around, and this is, I find this very intriguing, and this is not verified. I don't know where this started. It may be complete bullshit, but it was interesting enough that I thought I would mention it, because I actually think it's a good idea. It's a smart idea. And that is that there is at least supposedly one network, and we don't know if it's cable or broadcast, but there's supposedly one network interested in bidding for the rights to air WrestleMania on television. I think it makes total sense, you know, given that these networks seem to love throwing around money lately for live programming and sports and all that. So, look, you got to shoot your shot while you can, right? They already have cities bidding on WrestleMania. Why should television networks be any different? I mean, it was said, I don't remember where I read this, but it was said that WrestleMania this year, after expenses and everything, netted WWE a profit of about $15 million. So off a WrestleMania show that makes millions of dollars, and, you know, for the local economies and everything, WWE's cut was somewhere around $15 million. Well, they could probably find a network to pay them 10 times that amount for the rights just to air WrestleMania live. Why wouldn't they do that? It would almost be business malpractice for them not to. The only thing I don't like about the idea is the idea of commercials airing mid-match at WrestleMania. That I don't like. Maybe there's a way around that. You know, like during a football game or a baseball game, they don't take a commercial in the middle of the inning unless they go to some sort of a break or there's an injury or if it's between innings. So I just disdain this idea of taking commercials in the middle of matches anyway. And so hopefully there would be a way around that here in this situation. But, you know, maybe if a major network picked up WrestleMania, the frickin' thing wouldn't be 7 hours long. You know, and again, I don't know where this is coming from. I don't know which network this could be. If it's Fox, if it's some other network, I don't know. But, you know, Major League Baseball, they make big bucks for the World Series. The NFL does for the Super Bowl. If WWE can make even a fraction of that for WrestleMania, then hey, it more than sells itself. It would dwarf whatever profit they typically make on that show. And also, keep this in mind, too, it would also be a far bigger audience than WrestleMania has probably ever gotten before. We've had 34 WrestleManias, right? We're coming up on WrestleMania 35. It goes all the way back to 1985. Closed circuit, pay-per-view, now you have the WWE Network. The network has between 1.5 and 2 million subscribers, right? Somewhere in that range. And not all of them are watching WrestleMania. So, as far as the biggest WrestleMania audience, I mean, to my knowledge, it's still that 2012 show from Miami that had that first Rock versus John Cena match. I think that was around 1.2 million buys that show got. This was a couple of years before the network. An audience of 1.5 million, right, or so, 1.6 million, 1.7 million on network television is nothing. That's nothing. It would be considered a massive disappointment if they did what they did for their quote-unquote biggest WrestleMania ever. If they did that on network television, that would be seen as a colossal failure. But yet, it would be the biggest audience ever for a WrestleMania. So again, I don't see why they wouldn't at least consider it. I think that's a story to follow, and there could very well be some teeth to it. Meanwhile, the one other piece of news on television and shows and all this stuff concerns all the other pay-per-views, the so-called B-shows. They are expanding. All B-Show pay-per-views going forward will start at 7 Eastern, with kickoff matches starting at 6:30. The show will run typically through 11 p.m., sometimes later. Look at Backlash. That show went off the air. It was almost 11:30. All pay-per-views now we know are dual-branded. They have talent from Raw. They have talent from SmackDown. So, on the one hand, it gives them a chance to fit more people onto the card. But there really is no, is there really a need for Backlash or Hell in a Cell to run 4 hours long? Is that really necessary? This last pay-per-view, this Backlash show, remember, this doesn't happen every month, but this last pay-per-view did 8% thumbs up in our Twitter poll. 92% thumb, and we had a lot of people voting in this poll too, way more than usual. I think we had well over 5,000 people vote in this poll, which is more than a good sample size. 8% thumbs up, 92% thumbs down. Now, imagine adding an hour to that. I'm not a fan of this idea. Let's talk about Raw. From Albany, New York this past week, as I shift my body here. I have to keep my leg extended. This is such a pain in the ass. Ugh, this is such a pain in the ass. Oh my God, and they have me on these Colombian drugs here. I'm like on an antibiotic, and they gave me something else. I asked my doctor, I said, have you ever heard of this one before? He scans the barcode. He says, I've never heard of this before. He goes, the antibiotic looks okay. Just finish that out. And I'm doing this without any painkillers too, because I'm trying to avoid that, but this is not working out too well. But I probably could have used some painkillers watching the show on Monday night, though. Stephanie McMahon was back. As if I have not been through enough this week. She did what she does best. She browbeat Kurt Angle. Said, too often, Kurt lets his emotions get the better of him. Kurt did not argue this point at all. He did not defend himself. He actually agreed. He agreed with her. He admitted, I could use some more guidance, he said. This man has been general manager for over a year, by the way. If you still need more guidance after a year on the job, you may not be cut out for said job. I'm just saying. She said that she would replace Kurt in overseeing the contract signing later in the show for Money in the Bank between Nia Jax and Ronda Rousey, which honestly, given how shaky Kurt can be on the mic, I think was for the better. She also later kicked Kurt out of his office in the back, forcing Kurt to use a hallway to make his usual cell phone calls. They even poked fun at the fact that Kurt is always on his phone. He made a comment at one point about how the cell service sucks in the hallway, which I actually thought was kind of funny. Roman Reigns came out, and he complained that management does not want him anywhere near the Universal Championship. And you know what? After the way that he's been booked since WrestleMania, I think the guy has a point. He's not wrong. Because I'm still shocked that they didn't put the championship on him at WrestleMania. I was surprised they didn't put the title on him in Saudi Arabia. Maybe they don't want the championship on this guy. Maybe they're having second thoughts. I don't know. But anyway, Kevin Owens came out. This all led to a match between Reigns and Owens. It ended on a DQ. Jinder Mahal ran in. It turned into a tag team match. Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, they beat Kevin Owens and Jinder Mahal. And Jinder beat them both up with a chair when the match was over. Crowd seemed to be okay as the match went on. And even during the beatdown, they weren't cheering loudly as Jinder was hitting Roman with a chair. I think it all was because of the association with Rollins, because as soon as they hit Roman's music, they booed him again. And, this Roman Reigns babyface thing it's a failure. But one of the stupidest things I read all week was an excerpt from an interview that Bobby Fulton, you may or may not know that name, old school wrestler, part of the Fantastics. Bobby Fulton did an interview with a podcast called Pancakes and Power Slams. I don't know why I first saw this news item now, because apparently he was on the show 3 weeks ago, but there it was. He was talking about the inability of Roman Reigns to get over as a babyface and why the company should turn him heel, which I agree with. That's a perfectly sensible argument to make coming from somebody who was in the business, right? No problem. But he took it one step further. He said that if he cannot get over as a babyface and the people are booing him, fire him. Get rid of him or turn him heel. He's not getting the job done. If Bobby Fulton had the book instead of Vince McMahon, by that logic, John Cena would have been fired years ago when the fans started booing him and they didn't turn him heel. And that would have been a completely disastrous decision. That would have been like, I was going to say, you know, letting Babe Ruth go to, to the Yankees. But look, I agree. The man is miscast right now. I've been saying it for months. Everybody has been saying, I'm not the only one. Everybody has been saying it. He's miscast right now. And I've even made the comment before that if they would have turned him heel a couple of years ago, by now, he probably would be doing pretty well. People might have embraced him by now. We wouldn't be dealing with this right now had they turned him a couple of years ago. But they didn't. So, yeah, he could use a change, but fire him? Get rid of him? He's a good wrestler. He certainly has his fan base. They've invested a ton in this guy already, a ton of television time. You don't just fire somebody like that and let them walk out the door. All the TV time they've invested in this guy, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And I think Fulton made some good points otherwise in that interview from what I read and what little I heard, but I was reading this whole like excerpt about what he said, and he made some really good points. He compared it to the old territory days. If you weren't getting the job done back in the territory days, they would fire you or they would move you to a different territory. But it's not the old territory days anymore. I think some of these guys are still stuck in that old mindset, right? But it does beg the question, though, and I thought this would make for a good discussion point, and I'd love to get feedback from you guys on what you think. Would Roman Reigns, in his current incarnation, would Roman Reigns get over as a big star, a big babyface, in the territory days? Right? Because back then, you know, way more so than today, especially if we're talking WWF, it was the land of the giants. So Roman's kind of a big guy, but he's not the biggest guy. I don't think his size really wouldn't stand out, I don't think, that much if he was, you know, 25, 30 years ago. He'd have to have something else going for him. He doesn't have the charisma that guys like Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage had, or even Steve Austin or Shawn Michaels or John Cena. He does not have that same level of charisma, that same personality that those guys, I think, were a big part of their success. Right? Hogan wasn't the best wrestler in the world. He didn't have to be. He's one of the most charismatic guys that have ever walked through the curtain. I mean, if we're talking old school WWE here, there's not a chance that this guy gets over as a top babyface, even back then. But I do think he could have had success at a lower level, or maybe as like a Samoan heel for Hogan to beat, right? They brought in all the Stud and Orndorff and Bundy and, you know, Boss Man and all these people. They would feed to Hogan, all the big guys they would bring in, and evil foreigners, and they would bring them in and they would feed them to Hulk Hogan. He could have been the Samoan heel brought in for that very purpose. And Roman is a hell of a lot more athletic than a lot of those guys were back then. So at least he's got a leg up on them in that regard. So I think he would do, you know, pretty well, but I don't see him even back then as being a top guy. I don't think he'd be any better off then than he is now, other than the fact that back then there was no internet. There was no social media. I don't think he would be booed out of buildings the way that he is now. But I also don't think he'd be able to make a connection with the crowd like a lot of those great baby faces of the past were able to do. We have the Sami Zayn segment with Bobby Lashley's sisters. Now, I was warned by many of you in advance not to watch this show, specifically because of this segment. You warned me. Got emails from people. Stay away. Of course, I watched it anyway. I had to talk about the show. How can I talk about a show I don't watch? Almost $2.5 billion being paid to this company between Fox and USA, right, for these new TV deals. If I were Fox and USA, I'd be shaving some zeros off that after watching this segment. Of all the weeks to put on a segment like this, this takes balls. This takes brass balls, let me tell you. You know, there are two big observations that I came away from this week. After all the news, the TV news and everything this week, the more depressing observation is that there has never been another point in WWE history where fan feedback and fan input has meant less than it does today. In so much as the influence on the creative direction of the product is concerned. Okay, because they do their little fan council surveys, and they do solicit feedback about network shows you'd like to see and that kind of stuff. They do that, okay? But I cannot think of another period in history where fan feedback meant as little as it does here in 2018. No matter how good or bad the product is from week to week, it just doesn't seem to matter. They get $1 billion from Fox and a few hundred million from USA, and nothing else matters. That is the most important revenue stream for this company. And the reason why, by the way, putting Raw and or SmackDown on the network was never, ever a viable option. For all the mailbox questions that were sent in to me over the years, I've gotten about this. Okay, let this be a lesson why Raw or SmackDown, short of being canceled and them having no other place to put it, were never, ever going to be on the WWE network. In effect, the network was created as a failsafe in case something like that ever did happen, because they came very close. They were in a perilous position many years ago at Raw where, you know, they almost did not have a home for Raw. And, you know, they didn't play their cards right in their negotiations with USA. They had to settle on a worse deal, and they didn't control their ad money anymore. And so I think that was part of the mindset. And Vince, I think, even may have talked about this publicly, that never again were they going to put themselves in that position. And that's when sort of this idea of the network began to really bubble up, because you want to make sure you have a home. You have some place to go, God forbid, in case you do get canceled, something happens, what do you do? But it was never, ever it was always a last resort. It was never a viable option. Why would you put your own shows on your own network when you can score hundreds of millions of dollars in TV money from a major network? It never made any sense, but I would always get questions about that. But the problem is, when you have this kind of money being thrown around like this on these TV deals, now they can just coast. They can give us more segments like this if they really want to, and it doesn't even matter. They can do it just for shits and giggles, and they know it won't matter, and that to me is the most depressing takeaway from all of this TV news. It's great for the company. You would hope it's great for the wrestlers, all that money. Maybe it'll trickle down to them. Maybe. But for the fans, I look at this and I say to myself, that to me is the most depressing takeaway from all of that news. Now, my other observation, because there were two, and whether or not you find this depressing, I think is really up to the individual. I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing myself, but I don't think that there has ever been a point in WWE history where this idea of the guy, or having someone as the face of the company, has meant as little as it does today, has been as unimportant as it is today. People can boo Roman Reigns until they turn blue in the face. Brock Lesnar can be an absentee champion who shows up five times a year, and it just doesn't seem to matter. You know, when Hogan was on top, when Austin was on top, even Cena, the company really did revolve around those guys in a lot of ways. They lived and died by them. I've always said I do think the idea of just one guy that you build around is incredibly stupid, especially with how many times these guys get hurt. You know, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? Why not build up three or four different people who could fill that role? I do think, for example, right now, Seth Rollins could very capably fill that role. But yeah, and actually right now they have a few people, frankly. I mean, it's not just Rollins. They have AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Daniel Bryan. I mean, I think they're in pretty good shape right now as far as big names, as far as between both brands. But this idea of the guy in the face of the company, it hasn't worked out with Roman, okay? You could be a big Roman fan. You cannot deny the fact that it has not worked out the way that Vince McMahon would have hoped. It just hasn't. And you could say that it's unfair, it's not right. Maybe so, but it hasn't worked out, right? And that's okay, because guess what? The machine just keeps on going. The machine keeps on going. They're still making money hand over fist. It truly is the brand itself that sells, and it's not any one individual talent anymore. It really is. Even Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey was one of the most popular, well-known, you know, athletes, not just female athletes, but athletes in the world. All the Google searches for her and big pay-per-view buy rates that she did in UFC. And look, I mean, she hasn't done much so far, and I've actually been pretty impressed by her performances overall. And I think she'll get better over time. But even Ronda now, you know, it hasn't taken very long. Ronda doesn't feel as special as she did a couple of months ago. And we knew that would happen. The more often she appears on television, the less special you are. That's why there is something to be said for Brock Lesnar only showing up a few times a year. I know it's annoying as shit. Maybe people wouldn't be as upset about that if he didn't have the championship and he was just an attraction who popped up every now and then. Then I don't think people would mind as much. But even someone like Ronda just sort of, in a way, feels like just another person on the show. It's not as though, you know, Ronda's this huge name and we're going to build around her and she's going to really carry this brand and Raw's ratings are going to shoot through the roof. No. It really isn't about any one person anymore. You know, and is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? I think there are arguments that could be made on both sides. But this idea that the company can be rewarded with billions of dollars, you know, to produce television like this, because I got to bring this all back to the Bobby Lashley, Sami Zayn segment here. The fact that they could be rewarded with billions of dollars for stuff like this, and to be fair, it's not always this bad. It's one segment. But this is far from the only time they've produced the equivalent of what I would call a television dirty bomb, which is what this was. And they have absolutely no incentive going forward to not do it again or to make things better or give two craps what any of us have to say. I find that to be severely depressing. I would rather smash my other leg than have to sit through this segment again. Remember that Lashley sit-down interview with Renee Young a few weeks ago? How totally random and awkward it was for Lashley to start talking about his sisters. He looked into the camera, I love you, Kathy and Cindy and Mindy and Mandy, I love you, right? And I said, well, this kind of sucks, but maybe it's leading somewhere. I wanted them to do more with Lashley. You know, let us know, why is he back? Like, let's find out more about this guy instead of just throwing him on TV randomly. Maybe this is leading somewhere. It's only one segment. Let's give them a chance. Well, now I see what it led to, and I'm once again left feeling like a fucking fool for thinking that there was any sort of great long-term plan or payoff involved here at all. You know, it's like the WWE is like North Korea. Vince McMahon is Kim Jong-un if he was on nothing but a steady diet of cheeseburgers. Like, I want to make this work. I really do. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, but they just keep fucking me over and making me look stupid. Sami Zayn comes out. He introduces Lashley's sisters, his three sisters, who are three men dressed in drag. One has a mustache. Another one has a blonde wig on. It sounded like a bronchitis convention had descended upon Albany. It was so silent during this segment. They all complained about how mean Lashley was to them when we were younger. If only Lashley's father had pulled out these three times, he wouldn't have been subjected to this nonsense. Eventually, Lashley decided, hey, you know what? I should probably come out right about now. I was enjoying this way too much, just sitting here in the back. Maybe I should come out to the ring. Why would he wait? Why would he allow this to go on this long before he finally comes out? And by the way, when he finally came out, he was smiling. He was smiling when he came out. And they had him doing comedy. So then Sami Zayn and the sisters start beating him down. Then he beat up his sisters. Vince McMahon, let me tell you something. Vince McMahon committed the single greatest heist in the history of mankind with those two TV deals. That's what I was thinking when I got done watching this segment. And this idea that, you know, I saw some people complain, oh, it's transphobic. Come on, you know, like not one time did that thought even cross my mind watching this. This was not about transphobia or homophobia or arachnophobia. I just thought it was fucking stupid. It offended me because it was awful. It was awful, horrible, unfunny, boring television. This was a disgrace. Speaking of disgrace, it brings me to Baron Corbin. He beat No Way Jose. I bring this up because, you know, there was a time when he was on SmackDown where I thought Corbin had something. I would watch him on Talking Smack. Rest in peace, Talking Smack. Pour one out. I would watch him on Talking Smack. He sounded like a real person. He actually showed some personality. I thought, well, he's a pretty good talker, actually, when they just sort of let him do his own thing. He just comes across as a natural dick. I don't know what it is now, but Corbin has go-away heat with me. I have sub-zero interest in seeing him on my television whenever he comes out. Now, apparently he drives around a really nice car. He likes to go on social media and show pictures of his car, Maserati, whatever the hell it is. So I guess that makes him a hot shot. Great. Go be an Uber driver and you can show off your car. So long as it keeps you off my television, I'm okay with that. I've been enjoying the B-Team act with Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas. They won another match, their second match here on this show. They beat Breezango. I thought the post-match celebration was totally over the top. I thought it was great. Rolling down the ramp in the announcer's chair like Steve Austin did once. One of those post-Raw things they put on, those Raw DVDs. So I thought that was awesome. Lest anybody think that I didn't enjoy anything about this show, let this be proof that I did, in fact, enjoy something about this show. We then had Stephanie McMahon out to officiate the contract signing for Money in the Bank between Nia Jax and Ronda Rousey. I thought it was good. I thought it was a good segment. I still cannot believe how lame the setup to this match was. Again, something I didn't have a chance to comment on last week. That little encounter that they had on the red carpet, where Nia just walks up to Ronda, this very scripted, horrible dial. Oh, it felt so phony and forced. It just makes me think of something like Austin Tyson, you know, where you bring an outside celebrity in and you want to do this hot angle. They're on the red carpet. They want to have Nia confront her. It's just such a great illustration of how different things are today in a bad way, as compared to when they would do something like this back in the day. Even LT and Bam Bam, you know, when they kicked that whole thing off with the two of them back in 95, you know, Lawrence Taylor was sitting in the front row. Bam Bam lost the match. They had just lost the tag team championship match. And he saw LT and his agent or whoever sort of laughing at him at ringside. So he pie-faced him. It was very simple, very quick. But, you know, LT went to lunge at him and they held him back. And ultimately it led to a match between the two. Just little angles like that, you know, that felt real. That felt like, holy crap, this guy just pie-faced him. LT's going to murder him. And then you see something like this, and I don't know. It was, I just thought as a way to get to this match, it was terribly done. Terribly done. But now they're here. They've now, you know, made their bed. They're going to, you know, have Ronda Rousey in her first singles match challenge for the Women's Championship a lot sooner than I thought it would be. But they feel they need a big match, or maybe they have a plan. Maybe they have a long-term plan for her, and it's going to kick off at Money in the Bank. It might involve Natty. In fact, I think it probably does. So they have their plan. But here, Stephanie tried to stir the pot. She was pointing out the fact that Ronda has yet to have her first singles match, and yet she leapfrogged over everybody else in the women's division to get this match. She very astutely pointed out that it was Nia who challenged her, not the other way around. Stephanie said that Rousey comes from a place of flyweights and bantamweights, and in WWE, there are no weight limits, which pretty much tells you all you need to know about how seriously 205 Live is taken. They literally just did a storyline last month where Buddy Murphy could not make weight and was not given a cruiserweight championship shot. So anyway, Stephanie turns to Nia, and she says to her, she says, you know, why did it take you so long to beat little old Alexa Bliss? Boy, did she bury Alexa Bliss here. The same Alexa Bliss who I think ever since she came up to the main roster on SmackDown and then Raw has pretty much dominated up until recently and has been a champion almost her entire time on the main roster. And Stephanie made it sound like she's 2'5", and how the hell could you not beat this woman? So she's talking about that. She suggests that Nia is just lazy. Nia took exception to this. She said, I'm going to make a name for myself by beating Ronda Rousey. That's why I wanted this match. I want to beat you and make a name for myself at your expense of Money in the Bank. She said, Ronda cannot armbar her. You can't armbar me. Let it be known, for those who may have forgotten, because I could have sworn, I said, wait a minute. I could have sworn that on television in the last few months, we've seen Nia Jax tap out to an armbar. And in fact, it was at the beginning of March. It was 2 months ago. On Raw, almost 3 months now. On Raw, that Asuka tapped out Nia Jax on television, not even pay-per-view, but on TV, with an armbar. So this whole, you can't armbar me, I'm too big nonsense is a little tough for me to buy into. So they both signed the contract. Ronda got up in her face and said, I'm going to take your title and your arm. So on the whole, I thought this was fine. I'm just not a fan of how they got to this point, but They're here, and I think what they do at Money in the Bank is going to be very interesting. I know everybody is saying this now, but a few weeks ago when the match was first announced, I went right on Twitter and I immediately speculated, which is all it is. I don't know if they're going to go down this road or not, but I immediately pitched, you know, them having Natalya win the Money in the Bank contract and then cash in on Ronda to win the championship later on that same night, if we assume that Ronda wins the championship. They could also have Natty win the briefcase earlier in the show, come out and cash in mid-match between Ronda and Nia. Maybe both of them are down, so effectively she sort of steals the title from her quote-unquote best friend. Natty, you know, she's been positioned as Ronda's best friend ever since she came to Raw. And in fact, in the very next segment on the show, Natty won a Fatal 4-Way over Sarah Logan, Liv Morgan, and Dana Brooke to qualify for the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. So I think she's winning. I think she's winning, and I think they do end up going with that idea. Well, a couple of other things. They had Dolph Ziggler beating Chad Gable. I didn't think this was long enough. I'd like to see more of Chad Gable here on this show. I know Jason Jordan is going to be backstage at TV again this week. He's been backstage a few times. He hasn't come back yet. He'll be back any week now. I don't know if they're going to plug him right back into something with Seth Rollins. I'd like to see them wrap that whole thing up because I was getting into that storyline before he got hurt. But part of me also would love to see American Alpha reunited now that they're back on the same brand. I don't think you need to rush into that. And frankly, the tag team division right now is kind of dead. So if I were them, I would plug Jordan right back into something with Rollins when he comes back. Main event on the show, Braun Strowman beat Finn Balor. Two running power slams it took to beat him in the main event. I think it was a good match. I think this and the B-Team celebration were the only parts of the show I really enjoyed. So that is to say, not good. Probably one of the worst Raws overall of the year. Largely because of that segment that we shall not speak of again. SmackDown was a hell of a lot better. SmackDown, and it's not saying a lot. This was not the best SmackDown of the year or anything like that, but I thought it was a very good show. They wasted a lot of time in that opening segment with Miz and New Day, but after it was over, it left me thinking, if Miz does not win the briefcase, and he was my pick in January, he's still my pick now to win, but if he doesn't, I see them swerving everybody and having Kofi Kingston win that briefcase. Now, we still don't know which member of New Day will wrestle at Money in the Bank. I figured it would be Big E. Now I'm not so sure. It was interesting when they were polling, Miz was sort of polling during the segment to see which member of New Day might it be in that Money in the Bank match. And it was Xavier Woods who actually got the biggest pop of all three members of New Day. I would not go with him. Big E and Kofi are better choices. They now have Aiden English getting Lana Day over as a chant. He had a sign. He was holding it up. Said Lana Day. Trying to piggyback off of the Rusev Day chant. And it worked. At least for this week it worked. I love how easy it is to get people cheering for Lana. Lana has to be the worst female wrestler on the entire roster. And yet people still shit on Dana Brooke. You gotta love it. You can't have it both ways, people. You can't shit on Dana Brooke and then cheer for Lana Day. That's not the way this works. But that is the power of Rusev Day, the fact that they actually got people to chant that. It was Lana against Billie Kay in a qualifier for the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Thankfully, it was over quickly. Lana hit the X-Pac facebuster move for what I believe is her very first singles win. I think the first singles match that she has won in her entire career. Or at least she celebrated like it was. We had AJ Styles and Nutcracker Nakamura face-to-face to find out the stipulation that Nakamura, by virtue of his win over AJ the week before. Yes, they did a match between the champion and the challenger, non-title, to determine the stipulation for a match between the champion and the challenger. Okay. Funny thing about that is I thought their SmackDown match may have been the best match of any of the matches they've had yet. But Nakamura did win that match, and therefore he gets to choose his stipulation for Money in the Bank. And at first, Nakamura, he was teasing, oh, going to have a pillow fight, which I would not put that past them to do that. It's kind of scary that at first I was not completely sure if they were being serious or not. Thankfully, they weren't. Nakamura tried to attack AJ. It turned into a big brawl all over ringside. I thought this was really good. AJ tried a springboard move at one point off the barricade. Nakamura hit him with a chair in midair and laid him out with the Kinshasa. And then he started to count to 10. And then he got on the mic and announced that their match at Money in the Bank will be a last man standing match. Now, remember what I said on the last podcast 2 weeks ago that I did? David, one of our listeners, wrote in with all of these funny, you know, humorous suggestions about match stipulations, all the different ways this company could still fuck us over with finishes between Styles and Nakamura. And it was actually, he suggested a last man standing match at Money in the Bank, with both men failing to reach the count or failing to reach their feet before the count of 10. So we have yet another fuck finish between these two. It could happen. It could very well happen. I don't think it will. It's still early for predictions, but to me, I sense that AJ in the end here, AJ is going to win. Nakamura is not getting this title. And the match at SummerSlam is either AJ and Daniel Bryan or AJ and Samoa Joe. If it were me, I would not put the championship on Bryan yet. I'd hold that off until WrestleMania next year. Joe and Styles as a SummerSlam main event for the championship, possibly even switching the championship at that point, is something I think I could get behind. And maybe on the undercard, you do Bryan against Nakamura. You get two big SmackDown matches right there, all set up for SummerSlam. Sanity is still missing, by the way. Which is true about a lot of things this company does, but I mean literally the group Sanity has yet to debut on TV. They were running vignettes for them for many weeks, and then they just didn't show up. Maybe they took a wrong direction, maybe their ways was off, I don't know. They either just forgot, or maybe they watched that horrendous segment on television on Monday with Lashley Sisters, and they decided to stay in NXT, in which case I can't blame them. Big Cass. Gotta talk about Big Cass. He appears to have injured his knee again, same knee that was operated on for an ACL tear. He kept him out of action for all those months. He has been back on crutches backstage. They even showed him briefly on TV walking on crutches. And supposedly, the rumor is that he's waiting to see if he needs another ACL surgery. If he does, it would keep him out 6 to 9 months. And I think also if that happens, that's pretty much the end of Big Cass. I mean, we've seen WWE give up on guys for being injury prone before. So for every Undertaker who's been hurt, I think, for most of his career, or Mark Henry, who was injury prone and he did end up getting a world title run, for every one of those guys, there's someone like a Wade Barrett who had all of the potential in the world. He got hurt with his elbow, I think it was, a few times. And they just never seemed to get behind him again after that. And in fact, when he started to get over with the Bad News Barrett stuff, they told him to stop doing it. He was getting too over. And it just never worked out for him. And so he left. So for his sake, for Cass's sake, I hope it's all part of the work. I'm not convinced that it is. And I think Samoa Joe's going to Money in the Bank and not Daniel Bryan. As far as the ladder match is concerned, I think Joe's going to win on TV this week. And it's still very possible that it's Big Cass who comes out and costs Daniel Bryan the match. Last time we saw Cass on TV in the ring, I mean, it was a storyline leg injury. We could all just, you know, they could be trying to bamboozle us here by leaking news that it's a legitimate injury. I'm not convinced that it is. And I think Joe goes to Money in the Bank and we could very well end up getting a rematch between Bryan and Cass at the pay-per-view. Now, we did have a pretty cool main event on this show. First time ever. Bryan against Jeff Hardy. In a second chance qualifier for the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. Both men had previously lost in their respective qualifiers. It was supposed to be Cass against Joe, which was a kind of a weird match to begin with, heel on heel like that. But in light of this quote-unquote injury that Cass has, we ended up with a far better match. We ended up with a hell of a main event here. We also had Joe on commentary, which is always fun. Hardy hit a Swanton bomb at one point. Landed right on top of Bryan's knees. Bryan got his knees up. Hardy bounced. I love that. They showed on the replay, the slow-mo. He bounced off of his knees. Bryan won by tap out with the heel hook, trying to get that heel hook over. Really good match. Joe got in the ring. Bryan was celebrating. Joe just says, I don't know what you're celebrating because next week you have to face me. And he walked off. See? Simple, to the point. Comes off like a total badass. Samoa Joe against Daniel Bryan is the match this Tuesday on SmackDown. That is something to look forward to. That's going to be awesome. The tag team division, which only a few months ago was probably the hottest staple, I think, of this SmackDown show, feels completely dead right now. But main events like this, and we've had a few of them now, I think have helped sort of more than make up for it. They got to do something with this tag team division, though, because it really... And then you look at the Authors of Pain, even. They debuted on Raw. They wrestled a couple of matches. We haven't seen them since. Like I said, Sanity, they started airing vignettes. We haven't seen them at all. I don't know what they're doing. I don't think they know what they're doing. They have to come up with a plan. I heard Triple H say once, you know, he really doesn't want to call people up from NXT unless they have a long-term plan for them. Otherwise, he doesn't want to just call them up and then they sort of meander and they float around and they don't do anything. Obviously, either Vince McMahon does not subscribe to that theory or Triple H just had a change of heart, because there have been some instances where they've called people up and they just don't seem to know what the fuck they're doing with these people. And it's not going to do them any good. So hopefully they pull their heads out of their asses here and they come up with some kind of plan here for these people. So Money in the Bank so far. Here's what the card looks like. We still have a few weeks before the pay-per-view. We have the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Alexa Bliss, Ember Moon, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Natalia, Lana, Naomi. And the winner of a last chance battle royal tomorrow night on Raw involving Sasha Banks, Bayley, Sarah Logan, Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan, Mickie James, and Dana Brooke. It should be Sasha. This feud with Bayley is DOA. I am all for long-term storytelling, but this has just dragged on for far too long. Nothing has happened. There's been no new story advancement. I just don't care anymore. It's a dead story. It's a dead feud. Let them hug it out. Forget turning on this person. Just let them hug it out and move on. Sasha is the biggest star of the bunch. She should be in that Money in the Bank match. They really do need to start doing more with her. Reportedly, she signed a multi-year deal recently with WWE, according to the at WrestleVotes account on Twitter, I believe, is what got credit. And they've broken some news before, so I mean, we'll see if it comes out in the next few weeks. But you know, and she is the biggest, or you know, one of the biggest female stars they have on either roster. I know she hasn't been booked like it of late, but to me, she's top three as far as biggest women stars on either roster, maybe four, depending on where you rank Asuka. But she's no lower than that, and she should be in the Money in the Bank match. We have the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Bludgeon Brothers, defending against Gallows and Anderson, who beat the Usos on Tuesday to become number one contender. Feels like a placeholder, just, you know, another win for the Bludgeon Brothers, but there you go. We have Carmella defending the SmackDown Women's title against Asuka. We have Roman Reigns against Jinder Mahal in the beach ball match of the night. We have Nia Jax defending the Raw Women's title against Ronda Rousey. We have AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura in a last man standing match for the WWE Championship. And the men's Money in the Bank ladder match, which right now is Braun Strowman, Finn Balor, The Miz, Rusev, Kevin Owens, Bobby Roode, one of the members of New Day, and either Samoa Joe or Daniel Bryan. We'll find out on Tuesday. And like I said before, I think it'll be Joe. I think Cass is probably going to cost Bryan the match. I'm not convinced that he's legit hurt. And I think it's going to be Joe going to Money in the Bank. So I'll do more formal predictions when we get closer. Yeah, there's some matches to look forward to on this show. Roman and Jinder is not one of them. Carmella and Asuka is not one of them. That will not be one of Asuka's better matches. You know, even Bludgeon Brothers and Anderson and Gallows. I mean, does that really excite anybody? Probably not. Their tag team division really needs a nice kick in the ass. But the Money in the Bank ladder matches, it's hard to mess that up. Right? Some are better than others. It's hard to mess that up. I think those two matches and AJ Nakamura Last Man Standing, I think those three matches alone make this a show to look forward to. And also, I'm intrigued more than anything else. I don't know if it'll be a good match. We have no idea what to expect from Ronda Rousey one-on-one because we haven't seen it. And Nia is not that great. Is Ronda in a position, even in a short match, where she can sort of, in a way, carry Nia? I don't know. I'm more intrigued to see how they lay this match out than anything else. And if in fact they do some sort of Money in the Bank cash in either during the match or post match. But right now, the way things are set up, I'm looking forward to Money in the Bank.
Hey Hey, Sell the Monster Sounds Off podcast listeners. I'm Wade Keller from Pro Wrestling Torch. Maybe you've heard me on the Steve Austin Show on a regular basis, recapping pay-per-views. Well, now you can hear me four times per week. I do a post-Raw and post-SmackDown show called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. We have co-hosts, including, on a regular basis, Jason Solomon himself. Plus, live callers, our mailbag segment, and an on-site correspondent. And then later in the week, my podcast One Shows feature the Thursday flagship and Interview Friday. Check them out. Search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere that you listen to Pro Wrestling Podcasts.
NXT this past week, TM61 continues to cheat to win. Still pushing that heel turn. They did it again this week over Heavy Machinery. We had Nick Miller rolling up Otis. Otis is still one of my favorites. And Shane Thorne held his partner's foot on the ropes for the win. You know, look, it's the right thing to do with TM61 because they were going nowhere as babyfaces, but they're not going anywhere as heels either. I mean, it's still more of the mighty don't give a shit right now with these two. I'm not sure what it is. It's just that, I don't know. There's just something missing with these two guys right now. Next week, we are getting the start of a Who is Bianca Belair video series, which I'm looking forward to. This woman is the future of that division. Lacey Evans, the glow girl, as I call her, beat Kairi Sane. They're trying to build Lacey up right now. She needs this win more than Kairi does, so I have no problem with it. Kairi's already over. She'll be fine. She went for the insane elbow, but Lacey was standing up and caught her on her way down with a right hand to the jaw that she now calls the woman's right, which I have to admit, as unbelievably corny as that is, it actually is a pretty clever name for a finish. I don't know if that is something she came up with on her own or Triple H helped her the way that he helped Tyler Breeze when he was putting his whole gimmick together. I don't know, but it is pretty clever. Lars Sullivan beat Ricochet and the Velveteen Dream in a handicap match. Sullivan ran in on a match between the two of them previously, and so I guess this time the two of them decided to team up to take on Lars. And they worked well together for most of the match. Honestly, they looked like they would make a pretty badass tag team, which I don't want, because I want them to remain single stars. And thankfully, that's exactly what they will keep on being. When Velveteen Dream turned on Ricochet, there was a miscommunication, and Velveteen Dream thought that Ricochet had done it on purpose, and so he hit him with the Death Valley Driver, turned on his partner, left him laying, and that allowed Lars Sullivan to hit the Freak Accident on Ricochet for the win. So we have Ricochet and Kairi Sane eating pinfall losses on the same show. This was really good, though. I think for the time it lasted, it was really good. Again, a big part of NXT has to be using the more established talent, not every week, but using them to help get over the newer stars. And they've really been trying very hard to get Sullivan over as this destroyer. I believe they referred to him at one point here as the humongous hominid. That's the new thing they're calling him now. They're trying. And they have to. They have to create some stars on their own and not just bring in guys from the indies, because the majority of these stars in NXT and what has made NXT such a fun brand to follow, yeah, it's bringing in the guys like Ricochet. It's bringing in guys like Adam Cole and people like that. We need more Velveteen Dreams. You know, we need more people like Lars Sullivan. And I guess Lacey Evans, who doesn't really do anything for me right now, but you could tell that she's got the potential, I think, to be a big star. Bianca Belair, people like that, they need people like that to get over so they can point and say, hey, look, see, we created these people with our system. Right now, they don't have a whole lot of people like that. So they need to be doing more of this sort of thing. The big angle on the show, though, was the return of Johnny Gargano. The big angle on the show involved two indie stars. Johnny Gargano, who was back in a neck brace. He was out there with his wife, Candice LeRae. He was teasing that he was going to retire. The story is that he and his wife had come to an understanding that he would think about his future and that he would step away from the ring for his own health. That seemed like what they were sort of building towards. Then at the last second, Johnny basically swerved his wife and demanded that Tommaso Ciampa come out and face him. Candice was not happy about this. She felt bamboozled. Ciampa walked out. Candice ran to the back. She brought security down to the ring to protect her husband from doing something stupid. Johnny chased after Ciampa for a little bit. Ciampa got into the ring. Gargano, now he's outside. His wife is holding him back. Come on, let's go. Let's leave. She's trying to pull him to the back. He starts to go. Ciampa gets on the mic. He says, that's right. Listen to your wife. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Really goading this guy. Until Gargano charges back to the ring, jumps up on the apron, Ciampa knocks him off, and Gargano strikes Candice on the way down. Candice falls backwards, hits the ramp. They played it like she was dead. She was knocked out. That's how they went off the air. I thought this was a great angle. It had some shades, a little bit, reminded me of the old, you know, stuff with Macho Man and Elizabeth and Jake the Snake Roberts, although not as good. But it was the same thing then in a way, because you had Savage was being goaded by Jake. Elizabeth didn't want him to get hurt. She didn't want him doing something stupid. You know, like getting bit by a king cobra. But bringing the wife into things is always a good way to sort of ramp up the drama. It's even better when the wife can take bumps, which Candace can. And all of this leads now to a no disqualification match at TakeOver Chicago between Gargano and Ciampa. And I got to be honest with you, I have no doubt those two are going to tear the house down. They'll probably have the match of the weekend. I am underwhelmed, given that their last match was basically the same stipulation. I mean, non-sanction is basically no DQ. I figured this time they'd change it up a little bit. If they weren't going to do Hell in a Cell, okay, maybe they do False Count Anywhere. But they didn't do it. It's just no DQ. And that's too bad, even though I still think they're going to steal the show that weekend. Let's get to your mailbag questions. If you have them, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Kyle from Hartford, Connecticut. What's up, Kyle? Since WWE pay-per-views are now co-branded, would it benefit Raw or SmackDown to debut a TV title for both brands, possibly, where the championship is only defended at TV or even in the pre-show warm-up to give some of the lower card guys who will never find themselves on the pay-per-view itself something to do? No, I don't. I think they have just the right number of titles right now on each brand. And don't forget, they have the Cruiserweight title as well, which gets defended on some of the pay-per-views anyway. Plus, there's this rumor it hasn't happened yet, but there's still the possibility we may end up with women's tag team titles debuting soon, either on one or both brands. I think to add another singles title to both rosters, you're saying both rosters, that would be complete overkill, right? I mean, now that we have co-branded shows, it's almost impossible as it is to fit all of the existing titles on all of those shows. They didn't do it at Backlash. You know, they probably won't do it at Money in the Bank. I think adding more doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I will say this, though. I am not totally against the idea of bringing back the hardcore title or you know, something like that with the whole 24/7 rule, at least for TV, just because I think it was a fun gimmick. I mean, and I wouldn't do it on both brands. It would be like a temporary gimmick for somebody, maybe like a Curt Hawkins, you know, to give him something to do. And honestly, something like that would probably get him over, too. I wouldn't be against that, but as far as, you know, new singles titles for both brands? No, I think that's way, way overkill. Jeremy from St. Paul, Minnesota. Basketball, hockey, and baseball all have farm systems. The goal is to develop stars for the main team. Those systems have players who reach their potential, but their potential is only good enough for the farm team. I assume like in baseball, that would be AAA. Not the Mexican promotion. Why does every NXT star need to be called up to the main roster? Why can't they just be a great talent for the farm system? I agree. I mean, they have people like that already. I don't know that Cassius Ohno is ever coming up to the main roster. I don't think he is. Somebody like Cassius Ohno, I don't believe will be on the main roster. I think that his role is a player coach in NXT. And frankly, looking at what they've done with Ty Dillinger on the main roster, you could have said the same thing about him. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they do call up Ohno. And he's worked hard enough where I would hope at some point maybe he'll get that shot. I just don't see it. I don't, you know, even in NXT, he's not exactly lighting the world on fire. But, you know, people rave about him and he's always giving people advice and he's a great teacher and all that. And I think somebody like Ohno is the perfect player coach who probably would be a lot more useful if he were to stay right where he is in NXT. So I agree that you can have some people like that, but the large majority, the vast majority, the idea is that you're grooming them for bigger and better things. You want to make money with them. They want to make money. They're not making as much money working in NXT as they would if they were going to be on Raw or SmackDown now, for God's sakes. B-Show takes on a very different definition when you're talking about billions. So, you know, you can't tell somebody, look, you know, we want you down here, and so therefore you're not going to get a shot to make it to the main roster because, you know, for the majority of those guys, that's not what they're there for. They're there not to be in NXT forever. EC3 did not come back to WWE to be in NXT for the next 5 years. He came back to be a big star. And the only way to be a big, big star is to be on the main roster and to be at WrestleMania and to be in the Royal Rumble and to be on all those shows. That's where he needs to be eventually. That's where Ricochet needs to be and Adam Cole and all those guys. So the majority of them should have their shot to make it on the main roster because that's where you make the money. And that's where you really become, I think, truly valuable to the company. But you will have people like a Cassius Ohno. You will have people like an Oney Lorcan or a Danny Burch. Now, Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, I like that team a lot. I like both guys a lot. I saw, you know, a few weeks ago, Danny Burch is now officially signed a full-time deal. He's not just part-time with them anymore. That's great. And I could easily see Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch as a tag team on the main roster. And maybe one day they'll get that shot. But those are two other guys, especially Lorcan, who I see as almost like a player coach. I don't see them as being somebody who will necessarily move the needle on the main roster. Not that he's not good enough to be on the main roster, but, you know, he, I think, could probably serve them a lot better, honestly, by being in that role in NXT. So I guess I'm kind of agreeing with you in a way in that there are some people like that, but this notion of, you know, why can't a great talent just be great in NXT? Because that's not fair to them. If they're that good, they should have the shot to move up. Jeremy from the Bronx, I want to get your thoughts on 205 Live possibly becoming a secondary brand to NXT, similar to how SmackDown is for Raw. Well, again, as of October of next year, SmackDown is no one's bitch, okay? Not for the money that they're getting for it. But anyway, with a recent Fox deal, reports are saying 205 Live's future may be up in the air. We can take your idea of moving the tapings to Full Sail and have it be taped in tandem with NXT. The NXT roster is becoming very bloated, in my opinion, and I think having a secondary developmental brand could allow for more people to be featured regularly as opposed to every 4 weeks. I think having two competing brands would be beneficial to everyone involved. What say you? Nothing says death more than second developmental brand, okay? I think if you're going to go down that route, you just make NXT a two-hour show. And I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. But, you know, as opposed to just having a secondary brand under the secondary brand, I think it would make a lot more sense to just expand NXT every week and incorporate the Cruiserweights into that show and incorporate the Cruiserweight title into that show. But like I said, I like the one-hour format of NXT right now, or 50 minutes, whatever it is. I like that format a lot better. I think 205 Live, look, 205 Live can easily be taped after SmackDown, before SmackDown on Fridays when they move, or before Raw on Mondays. And then they could air it the next day on Tuesday on the network. But to add a secondary brand to what is already basically a secondary brand, to me, does not sound like a formula for success. Cedric from Huntingtown, Maryland, was watching the WWE 24 special on Seth Rollins, and I know Roman Reigns was going to take the title off of Rollins at Survivor Series 2015, which would have led to Rollins facing off against Triple H at WrestleMania 32. However, with Rollins' injury, plans changed, and Roman ended up facing Triple H instead of Seth. Do you know who Roman Reigns' opponent would have been at WrestleMania 32 had Seth Rollins not gotten hurt? I believe the plan, or the early plan, the early talk at the time, was for the WrestleMania 32 main event to be Roman Reigns against John Cena. And like you said, Seth got hurt, and that plan went out the window. But I believe the plan was going to be Reigns versus Cena. Shamar from Raleigh, North Carolina, do you think the inevitable breakup of the New Day is going to happen with the announcement of the Money in the Bank participant? It could be a Shield-type moment with Big E turning heel and destroying the other two members, making him the one to enter the match. He doesn't even have to win the briefcase because now he has two ready-made feuds going into SummerSlam. I've always said that the New Day doesn't have to and should not break up. You know, nobody should go heel. There shouldn't be a Shield-like turn. When the time comes that those guys are going to go on their way, or if they're going to go ahead and give Kofi or Big E a big singles push. And of the two, I think Big E has more potential to be a bigger single star. Why can't they all just be friends and just sort of go on their way? I just don't see the need to break them up. I wouldn't do that. So that way you can always fall back on the act, because even though I'm sick and tired of New Day, they're still really popular and they probably still make the company a lot of money. I think it would be stupid to kind of turn one of them and basically break them up and not be able to put them back together. You can give Big E a singles push without breaking, like formally breaking up New Day. So yeah, I would not do that. Dominic from Connecticut. I recently rewatched Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar for the Universal title of WrestleMania 33, and believe it is one of my all-time favorite matches. It is not a technical masterpiece or even a superbly told story, but it's bell-to-bell action that had the crowd on their feet the whole time. It went the perfect length. Both guys put in an excellent performance, especially Goldberg. He looked great physically. He wasn't sucking wind. He wasn't hurt, even though he was suplexed 10 times. Do you find this match as entertaining and as great as I do? I think it was an excellent match. Like you said, perfect length. It didn't go longer than 5 or 6 minutes. It didn't overstay its welcome. From the moment the bell rang, if I remember, I think, you know, Lesnar went right after him and it was all action. I think in the first 60 seconds of the match, Goldberg speared him through the barricade. It was great. I really don't have any complaints about it, honestly. And, you know, the right guy went over. And I don't think that it will be looked back on as one of the all-time great championship matches in WrestleMania history just because it was so short. And, you know, people love to bitch, oh, you know, Goldberg has three moves, he can't wrestle, you know, which, whatever, that doesn't mean he can't go out there and have a great match. But I think the match they put together was excellent. I think it's one of the better championship matches at WrestleMania in many years. Danny from the Philippines, whatever happened to Buff Bagwell? There are a few different stories about why he was fired from WWE, but the real story is unclear. Do you think he will ever be in the Hall of Fame? Well, right now, Buff Bagwell, last I heard anyway, he's still doing the male escort thing. I can tell you he was also in New Orleans for WrestleMania weekend this year, and I heard some stories about him and the way that he was treating some other people that do not paint him in a very flattering light, pretty much backed up what I already thought about the guy. As far as WWE, the belief has always been that he just rubbed people the wrong way. His attitude, you know, his shit don't stink, that whole thing. It just rubbed people the wrong way backstage when he first came in. He had the bad match in Tacoma on Raw with Booker T. They were put in an impossible position, but they had a bad match. And it killed WCW. It killed any possibility of a WCW revival. WWE had this all mapped out, and Jim Ross has talked about this. He sat in on a lot of these creative meetings. They mapped out plans for WCW to continue on as a separate brand. They were going to give them the Monday Night Raw slot. I still find that impossible to believe all these years later, but they say it. You know, they claim it's true. They wanted WCW to be a success, and they knew that they couldn't give them the secondary show. They were willing to surrender Monday nights and make that Nitro, basically. I don't know if they were going to call it Nitro or give them the Raw name, but WCW was going to take over on Mondays, and WWE would have SmackDown on Thursdays. That was the plan. And then they sent those two out there, random match, Booker T against Buff Bagwell, and the fans just shit all over them. And it scared off Vince McMahon, and that was it. Plus, you know, Buff has always blamed Jim Ross for spreading what he claims is a false story. You probably heard this about Buff's mom, Judy, that being former WCW tag team champion on a pole, Judy Bagwell, calling the WWE offices on behalf of her son. JR told the story on one of those old Legends Roundtable shows on the network, which I wish they would resurrect, by the way. I enjoy Table for Three. I think it's great. But those old Legends Roundtable shows they used to do many years ago are still, I think, some of the best shows they ever produced. I wish they would bring those back. But on one of those shows, he told the story because, you know, at the time, JR was the head of talent relations. So he had the job of, you know, having to make phone calls sometimes to fire people. And he fired Buff. But, you know, he told the story that Buff's mom, Judy, called him. She called the office one day to inform him that her son would not be able to appear on some house shows. I think he may have had a concussion or claimed he had a concussion or whatever the issue was. And JR just said to her, he says, look, if you want to call me to talk, that's fine. But when it comes to your son, this is the last conversation that you and I are ever going to have about your son. He's a grown man. He should be calling me himself, not you. And, you know, Buff denies that ever happened. He said that's bullshit. He blames JR. Oh, he ruined my career. It's way more believable to me that Buff ruined his own career because of his attitude. And frankly, he just wasn't very good. He was not very good. And I have no idea what incentive Jim Ross would have to make up a story about the man's mother calling the office on his behalf. It's a very bizarre story for him to manufacture. So I tend to side with JR on this one. As far as Hall of Fame, no. Buff Bagwell should not be anywhere near the WWE Hall of Fame. Damien from Baltimore, Maryland. I'm currently watching the Monday Night Wars from start to finish, and I keep noticing that at certain points throughout the year, either Raw or Nitro would miss a week of television. For example, on the network, in 1996, Nitro did not have a March 4th episode, but Raw did. Could you shed any light into why this is? Well, I know that, you know, most of the time Nitro was either preempted by NBA basketball on TNT. Raw would be preempted a few times a year, usually by tennis or that stupid dog show. She used to piss me off. But in this case, I didn't know. I had to look it up. I mean, you're asking about a very specific episode. I have a good memory, but it's not that good. So I looked it up. The March 4th episode of Nitro is actually not preempted for basketball. I mean, that probably wouldn't be until May or June. It was bumped for a two-part movie called Andersonville, which was about a POW camp during the Civil War. So, kind of random, but there you go. And we'll end with this, a non-wrestling question here from Ricardo from Salt Lake City. Did you watch the Thundercats when you were a kid? If so, can you give your opinion on that Thundercats roar horse shit that's coming out next year? It's pissing a lot of people off, including myself, and I just wanted to know if you had an opinion on it. I didn't. This is the first I'm hearing of it. I was probably away maybe when they made the announcement. I don't know. But I looked it up and I kind of wish that I never did because the animation looks terrible. It looks absolutely horrible. But to answer your question, I did watch the Thundercats as a kid. I was big. My whole thing when I was a little kid was He-Man and Thundercats. And later on, of course, it was Ninja Turtles. Power Rangers was, by that point, I was far too old for this stuff. But when I was a kid, it was all about He-Man and Thundercats, you know, which is why my childhood was better than most of the people listening to this right now. I stand by that. You had Lino, Snarf, who was annoying as shit. Of course, you had Mummera, right? The evil villain, Mummera. Not quite as badass as Skeletor. But I love skulls, so, you know, having a villain that basically is a walking skull is pretty cool to me. Actually, now that I think about it, both shows had that one really super annoying character. Like, for Thundercats, it was Snarf. And for He-Man, it was this character named Orko, who really bugged the crap out of me. He was like this flying whatever the fuck. But, you know, he had like an O. And you couldn't see his face. He had a stupid hat on. He was like a magician or something. God, Orko, it was so annoying. Actually, it reminds me now. There was another character. It was not like a major character. And I only saw it, I think, like once or twice. But there was actually a character. A He-Man character. A He-Man character called Fisto. Holy shit, I just remembered Fisto. Yes, they had a character named Fisto. Whose claim to fame was that he had a giant fist. I looking back on this now, I guess it was just a different time. And as a kid, who the hell? I mean, it was cool, right? This guy had a giant fist. Now, God only knows what he did with that fist. I look back on this now, and I'm kind of mortified by that. But hey, to each their own. But yeah, they had a character called Fisto, who had a giant fist, and he shot white goo at people. I don't know how I didn't remember this until just now. Oh my God, wow. Well, I could tell you this. I never did have the Fisto action figure. I've probably... well, we'll leave it at that. But yeah, wow. How about that? We had Lino, we had Orko, we had Fisto.
And on that note, we will endo the show-o. Thank you for writing in to the mailbag-o. Please send your questions in to solomonstero at gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, at solomonster is my handle. There's not a whole lot going on with me right now with this leg being the way it is. I'm kind of, it's kind of depressing in all honesty. It's a very frustrating injury to have because there isn't a whole lot that I can do. I'm out of work at the moment. It's just a whole mess. But like I was saying earlier, supposed to get the stitches out later in the week. We'll see how it looks. I saw how it looked the other day. It's going to be a hell of a scar. That much I know, but it's tough because they have this wrap on it right now, and I can feel it keeps pulling at the stitches, and it's very annoying. And I still saw some blood seeping through this thing here. This thing, let me tell you, they could not get it to stop bleeding. There was so much blood. I went home, my bathing suit, you look at the inside of a bathing suit, it's like the white netting. The entire inside of the bathing suit was just red. Like, it was drenched in blood. I lost some good clothes because of this nonsense, but hopefully everything will be fine in the end. Like I said, I'm lucky there's no structural damage. Nothing is broken. This is not like a 6-month recovery or anything like that. God forbid. I'm hoping within a week or two, things will be more back to normal. But right now it's a rough time. It's a tough injury. It really is. When you get hurt right on the bend of the knee, it sucks. It really sucks. But I don't know how I sat here this whole time like this. I'm supposed to have my foot elevated. They claim that's probably why the foot is all swollen. But I can't. 24 hours a day, I can't elevate this thing. So I'm sitting here right now, and I know as soon as I get up, my leg is going to kill me. Kill me. But anyway, I will see you guys back here, episode 549. For more sound off, hopefully feeling a lot better than I do now. Have a great holiday weekend. It is Memorial Day weekend. Most of you, I'm sure, are off from work tomorrow. So have yourselves a great weekend. Hopefully you have great weather wherever you are. It keeps raining here in New York. Actually, it rained most of the time I was in Colombia. I didn't realize that it's rainy season. It's like the winter in Colombia. It rained literally every day. Not all day, but like every day we were there, it rained. Supposedly in a few weeks, though, you get the best weather. I'll see you back here next week for more sound off. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.